This is Weekend Ag Matters, produced by the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network and News Talk 1540 KXEL. Here are your hosts, Anna Hastert and Dustin Hoffman.
Thanks for tuning into Weekend Ag Matters. I'm Anna Hastert, your host, joined by
Dustin Hoffman
and Jenna Hoffman.
All right. Thanks for joining us this week, guys. You two have been very busy this week. You started off the week by attending a roundtable that was hosted by former U.S. Secretary of Agriculture and Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack. He was speaking to some Iowa Commodity Group leaders as well as Iowa farmers about USMCA and its impacts. Jenna, this was the first event that you attended as a member of the press. Tell us what you took away from this event.
So Vilsack had a lot of good things to say about the USMCA, his take on it, when he think it would be passed, all good things like that. But he was also, well, we were accompanied by a bunch of associations from Iowa that had a lot of knowledge to contribute to their commodity, which really helped in my understanding of the agreement and what it would mean for us as a country.
Yeah, and Dustin, you also attended this event, but covered USMCA a little bit beyond, too. Tell us what you've covered on that topic this week here.
Well, USMCA has really been a hot point issue this week. As Jenna talked about, Secretary Vilsack was here talking about the importance of it. He obviously was able to touch on a lot on the dairy industry because of him working with the U.S. Dairy Export Association there. And so he had those numbers there. And you hear about the impact from the Iowa commodity groups. But then we all know, though, it's still sitting there waiting to be pushed through the Congress. Mexico did become the first country to ratify it on Wednesday. They passed it through the Senate. The president's going to sign it there. So they're good to go. It's up to us and Canada now to get it done. We know House Democrats have had some problems with labor enforcement and also environmental enforcement. That's been talked about for the last several months. And Ambassador Lighthizer, U.S. Trade Representative, went to Capitol Hill twice this week, once to sit in front of the Senate Finance Committee chaired by Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. There he was basically asked point blank, is it an enforceable agreement? He told all the senators in attendance that, yes, this is an enforceable agreement. If there are any other issues that we need to work out, that has got to happen. But they've also talked about there have been congressional people going to Mexico, talking to the officials there, because, again, it's the labor enforcement and the environmental enforcement they want to see. Then he went to the House Ways and Means Committee later on Wednesday, and that's when things got very heated, I should say. House Republicans were charging that the Democrats are dragging their feet and that Speaker Pelosi doesn't want to give Trump a win before the 2020 election. The Democrats are saying the Republicans are starting to push it through and they're trying to ram it through. U.S. Trade Representative Lighthizer came back and said, you've had 9 months to look at this. This isn't new. You know, I don't really see how we're trying to ram it through. So he really had to defend it there. He was even attacked by Wisconsin lawmaker Ron Kind, who said that President Trump, with all his tariffs, was going to lose the votes in the ag state. Lighthizer commented and said, you know, hey, if you're worried about the farmers, why don't you guys pass USMCA? So, again, got a little heated, but, again, Mexico has ratified it, so that's where we're sitting right now with USMCA.
Yeah, and Dustin, where are we sitting at with the negotiations with China?
Well, as we know, China came to a grinding halt a couple weeks ago last month, and we're kind of hoping things get jump-started. We do have confirmation that President Trump and President Xi will meet next week at the G20 summit in Japan. Hopefully, they can get it jump-started again, and we can be back on track. I know China just imposed more pork restrictions on Canada, so if the United States wants to take advantage of that, they better swoop in quickly and get something worked out, because we still have a 62% tariff on our products in China.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of news this week, not only on the trade front, but USDA announced this week a new measure to help farmers who were unable to plant corn and soybeans. Of course, that's due to the widespread flooding all across the Midwest, whether it be Iowa, Missouri, Nebraska, Illinois, Indiana, you name it. But the change that they made was growers can now hay, graze, or cut cover crops for silage on prevented plant acres on or after September 1st and still maintain their eligibility for the full 2019 prevented planting indemnity. Now, the previous date that they had set was November 1st. Again, pushing that up a little bit to September 1st for those of you who are looking to put cover crops on those prevented plant acres. University of Illinois ag economist Scott Irwin said the changes should encourage farmers to file for prevented plant claims and seed cover crops on more of their acres. With the new rule, Irwin said farmers may be able to get three types of income from on prevent plant acres. So a little bit encouraging there for farmers who weren't able to put their original crop on there. But those three payments look to be an insurance indemnity, plus the value of silage produced, as well as a potential payment from USDA's $16 billion farm aid package. So a little relief for those farmers who are still battling flooded fields and flooded bins and are still looking to recover from that huge loss there.
Yeah, and you know, you're talking about the floods and everything, you know, the prevent plant. I mean, we've really been thrown into a loop this year with the weather. I mean, as we're recording the program right now, it's raining in Des Moines, coming in today, thunderstorms while the sun was trying to rise. But, you know, it's really thrown us for a loop, and it's also caused the markets to really react. I mean, and all things considered, with the amount of carryover we have on beans, and we've talked to market analysts about this, the beans should be going down, but the fact that we are seeing bad weather and bad situations all over the Midwest, you know, they're not getting planted, and farmers, unfortunately, are having to make some tough decisions. And even after they've gotten in, I know my family and friends up in Minnesota, where I came from, just Thursday night had tornadoes and tennis ball size hail come through. And I saw pictures from cousins up there who had just gotten their corn in a few weeks ago, and it was starting to come up and was in that three leaf stage. And it's like someone just machine gunned the fields. It's farmers just can't seem to catch a break this year on Mother Nature. We thought she was crazy last year. She's really off her meds this year, I would have to say.
Yeah, Dustin, let's bring in Jenna back in one more time before we head to the commercial break. Jenna, tell our listeners where we're going to be at here this next week.
This next week, I will be attending, well, I guess we all will be attending, the Economic Summit for the Iowa Farm Bureau Federation for 2019. We'll be learning about mental health as it relates to farmers and some preventative action we can take there and what you can look for in a farmer in need. So we'll be getting a lot out of that one there. So.
All right. Well, that concludes the opening segment here of Week in Ag Matters. Stay tuned. We'll have more news and market information after the break.
How many acres are you keeping an eye on? Another pair of eyes could be very helpful in protecting your ROI, especially ones that are highly trained. And that's what you'll get with an FS Crop Specialist. They can spot issues you might not even know you have using the latest technology, including thermal, drone, and NDVI imaging. Then they can get an early treatment plan started. Contact your local FS Crop Specialist to learn more about our crop scouting services. It's one more way FS is bringing you what's next.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here again is Dustin Hoffman.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Trade has been something we've been focused a lot about, and especially the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA. Former Ag Secretary and former Governor of Iowa Tom Vilsack was in Urbandale earlier this week to talk about the USMCA at a roundtable discussion. Here are his comments on the trade pact.
It's great to be with you today, and this is an incredibly important topic. Let me start with some basic facts about agriculture and the food industry. I've been encouraging people in agriculture and in the food industry to talk about this as if it were a single industry, not separating farmers from those who process and produce the food that we consume, but looking at it as a single industry. And the reason for that is that the food and agriculture industry is responsible either directly or indirectly for 43 million jobs in the United States. That's 28% of the entire workforce of the U.S. It impacts roughly 20% of the entire economy. So it is the single largest employer, and it is one of the most significant aspects of our economy. So anything that impacts and affects the food and agriculture industry obviously impacts the U.S. economy. For 23 or 24 years, we've had a relationship with Canada and Mexico that has allowed, for the most part, access particularly to the Mexican market. And it has certainly benefited American agriculture and the food industry. You know, roughly 30% of all agricultural products that are produced in this state and around the country are exported, and it's responsible for about 20% of all farm income. So as we deal with a challenging time on America's farms and ranches, the whole notion of an opportunity to expand access to new markets or to see a continuation of an important market is incredibly important. The administration has completed its negotiations with Mexico and Canada, and there has been an evaluation of the impact and effect of this, and I'm very familiar with the dairy piece of it, and I'll speak specifically about dairy. We know that the Mexican market is the number one market for American dairy products. We sell roughly 30% of all of the dairy products, that would be powder and cheese and whey and protein, milk protein concentrates. We sell 30% of all that we export goes to a single country, that's Mexico. And that 30% of our exports represents roughly 75% of Mexico's entire imports of dairy products. So it is a really important market for us. And it's an important market because there are no barriers. There are no tariffs. There are no non-scientific barriers that prevent us from being able to sell product in Mexico. So this agreement is an extension, if you will, of very favorable conditions that we have had in NAFTA. It's a continuation. It's an extension of those tariff-free, barrier-free access to an incredibly important market, Mexico, for the U.S. dairy producers. Canada is a different story. Canada, for many years, has had a relatively closed market to U.S. dairy. They have a supply management system in Canada that controls the amount of dairy that is produced. It's very beneficial for their farmers, but it is very detrimental to the consumers in Canada. They end up paying a substantially greater amount for their dairy products. We've always had concerns, but these concerns have heightened when Canada, as was the case in the U.S., began to make more butter. They essentially ended up with a lot of surplus milk powder. Rather than dealing with that milk powder in their own market, as they're supposed to with a supply management system, they figured out a way to price it in a way that made it very, very favorable for export. And what we saw was the Canadian exports really sort of roil the powder market globally, hurting U.S. producers and hurting producers around the world. This agreement, the USMCA agreement, basically has called Canada out and suggested that they need to change that pricing system and to eliminate it so that they're no longer distorting the powder market. This will open up opportunities for our producers and our processors to once again sell powder at a profit. In addition, the Canadians have agreed to open up their market to additional sales of U.S. dairy products. It's not a lot, but it's more than we would have had under TPP, and we don't have to share it with any other nation. The bottom line is we expect and anticipate several hundred million dollars of additional trade opportunities in dairy as a result of this agreement. Now, there are two steps that are required for this agreement to be ratified. First, the administration has to submit the actual language for ratification to Congress. They have yet to do that. I think they are making sure that there are sufficient votes in Congress before they submit this agreement for ratification. There are those in Congress that have concerns about the agreement. Some have concerns about the enforcement of labor provisions in Mexico. Some have concerns about environmental provisions. And there are some who have concerns about some social issues that have dealt with in the agreement that may or may not be supported by some conservative members in our Congress. So the result is that right now there's a bit of uncertainty about where we stand relative to passage. That's why meetings like this are important, so that people understand and appreciate that jobs are connected, farm profit is connected to trade, and that we encourage our members of Congress to take a serious look at this agreement to get it ratified. It's important that it gets ratified in 2019. I think it's fair to say that if this thing bleeds over into 2020, it gets into presidential politics and congressional politics, which makes passage more difficult. So it's really important now for the administration to work with Congress, for Congress to work with the administration in order to get the votes so that the president feels confident of submitting the language, and Congress then will have a certain period of time, I think it's 90 days or so, in which to vote on the ratification. And the hope is that it gets done this summer or certainly early fall. It's an important agreement for dairy. It also creates there often in trade agreements there are side agreements, side letters. There's a side letter here for dairy that's really important. Our European friends, they produce a lot of dairy, and they sell a lot of dairy around the world. And they recognize something about the U.S., that the long-term prospects for the dairy industry globally are certainly in favor of the U.S. because of our capacity to continue to produce, the incredible innovation, the incredible productivity of American dairy. And I think the Europeans recognize that at some point in time they will be environmentally constrained in terms of their ability to produce more dairy. And so they're looking for ways in the market to sort of monopolize, to be able to have the market to themselves, because they understand and appreciate that Americans are now not only producing a lot of great quality dairy products, but they're also producing world-renowned cheeses. About 89 different awards, international awards, were submitted for American cheeses last year, and we're now being very competitive with European cheese. So how do you create a situation where you don't have to compete with America? Well, you essentially go into countries like Mexico, you go into countries like Japan, and you negotiate trade agreements. And in those trade agreements, you ask those countries to essentially protect certain cheese names. It's called a geographic indicator. So that only Europeans can sell Parmesan cheese. Only Europeans can sell Asiago or Gorgonzola. They protect certain cheese names from use by anybody else, any other competitor. Now, you can still produce Parmesan cheese, but you just can't sell it as Parmesan cheese. Now, let's think about the marketing challenge that presents. So these geographic indications, the Europeans have been very aggressive. They went in and they finalized their free trade agreement with Mexico. They finalized a free trade agreement with Japan. And in both of those agreements, they are trying to get protections for certain cheese names. The side agreement that was entered into with reference to the USMCA will make it more difficult in Mexico for the Europeans to expand the number of geographic indicators, to expand the area where they have a monopoly in terms of the use of certain terms. It creates a process by which we can come in and challenge the determination by the Mexican government that certain cheese names need to be protected. This is really, really important. It could potentially result in billions of dollars of either additional income or lost income for dairy producers over time. So the USMCA, from a dairy perspective, is critically important. It preserves the Mexican market, which is our number one market, tariff-free and barrier-free. It creates the side agreement that protects us in terms of the expansion of geographic indications. And it opens up the Canadian market, and it eliminates the Class 7 pricing system that's distorted the powder market. That's why dairy producers are urging members of Congress to strongly consider ratification and getting it done as soon as possible. Trade agreements are always tough, and I'll finish with this. They're always tough because they're complicated. They are, in some cases, hundreds of pages, sometimes thousands of pages long, with a lot of minute detail. They're negotiated over a long period of time, painstaking process. Just in the dairy, there might be 1,800 different classifications or different product classifications that are dealt with. So it's really complicated. And it's easy for those who are not supportive of these agreements to raise questions about them. That's why it's important for those who do and who do benefit from trade to make sure that they make their voices heard as well. American agriculture has had a trade surplus with the rest of the world for over 50 years. In other words, we sell a lot more product outside of the U.S. than we purchase. You know, the beauty of American agriculture is that we don't really have to purchase anything for our people to be fed. American producers basically produce enough for us to feed ourselves, but they're incredibly productive, and as a result, they have additional product to be able to sell to the rest of the world. And the reality is that we do not often explain to people the benefits of trade. If you think about those 43 million people who are connected to the food and agriculture industry, 30% of food products basically exported, you're talking about millions of jobs that are impacted by all of this. And I think it's important to note that export-related jobs end up paying about, on average, about 18% more than non-export-related jobs in our economy. So we're talking good-paying jobs, we're talking farm income, we're talking supports for states like Iowa and for communities like the one we're in today. And all of the supporting industries, the farm machinery industries, all of the supported industries that benefit. What happens if this doesn't get ratified? we just can't assume that NAFTA agreement that's in place will remain. The president has indicated the possibility of pulling out of NAFTA, which would essentially create a situation where all of this access that we've talked about to the Mexican market would be severely impacted, because we would then see an increase in tariffs on virtually all of our agricultural products, making it harder to do business in Mexico. So obviously we'd prefer not to risk that outcome. That's why it's important, I think, for this agreement to get done, for the benefits to American agriculture, for the certainty it can provide to producers in an uncertain time, for the momentum it creates for additional trade agreements, and to avoid a catastrophic decision that the president might make of pulling out of NAFTA. This isn't about giving President Trump a victory. It's about giving the farmers in this room a victory. It's about giving all the people whose jobs are connected to the food and agriculture industry a victory. It's about giving the American economy a victory.
And that, again, was former Ag Secretary and former Governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack, here on Weekend Ag Matters on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. We'll be back after the break.
You're listening to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Here is Ken Root.
Our ancestors dealt with summer heat without grumbling. But now, we use every vehicle and building to create microclimates that the natural world never intended. I can't say that I liked much about summer heat when growing up in Oklahoma, at a time when air conditioning was only found in a few department stores in Oklahoma City. We lived in a farmhouse that was so askew and thin walls that a breeze could pass through year-round. I guess they were air-conditioned before their time. Just to get this on the table, I think the affordability of air conditioning has done more damage to our culture than any other single scientific advancement. We have built isolated cubes that have greatly reduced personal interaction. For example, the farmhouse of years gone by had a porch where everyone gathered in hot weather. It was cool, shady, breezy, and communal. People visited with one another and entertained themselves with mostly pleasant conversation. Today we live in homes that are sealed against the elements, with at least two sides that are void of windows. To replace the loss of companionship, we've added radio, telephones, iPhone, and internet. The goal of being comfortable has also resulted in far less human interaction. In a row of houses in the mid-1900s, you could listen to find out what your neighbors were doing. Now you've got to go on Facebook to read what they say they're doing. Not only were we hot, we also breathed a lot of dust. If there's anything that modern weatherization and mechanical heating and cooling have done, it is to filter the air and reduce the volume and size of airborne dirt. I tell people the reason Okies talk through their noses is because when we opened our mouths, they filled up with dirt. We baled a lot of hay, and the dust came off of it in waves. My parents had a stationary baler in the 1940s that required two people to sit and tie each bale that came through. When they finished the workday, they were the same color as the dirt. They wore towels around their faces, but how their lungs stood it is a mystery to me. For those who drive machinery, there's no question that the climate control cab improves efficiency and health of the operator. Interestingly, we had to break down the social barriers of farmers having tractors with air-conditioned cabs well after the technology was available. A few years ago, I saw the first John Deere 8020 tractor on display at a county fair in Watseka, Illinois. It was the prototype for the big four-wheel drive articulated pulling machines of today. But the thing that stood out was it had no cab. It just wasn't appropriate for agriculture to move from metal ovens with steel seats to power steering and air-conditioned comfort in such a short period of time. Today, I spend the hot days running from one sheltered spot to another. But when I determine to step outside and stay there, I begin to feel better. I realize the human body can continue to work while enduring heat, and that it can bounce back by drinking water and sitting in the shade for a moment. Still, given the choice, I'll head back to the coolness of the house. When I step in, I think it's cold, and passing from hot to cool so easily is not natural. But in a few minutes, I find myself perfectly happy in there and dreading when I must face the heat again. We are never going back to the old ways, at least not willingly. We may go camping and simulate roughing it in other ways, but always with the realization there's a place where we can go to reduce the stress of the natural elements. We are softer than our ancestors, but we're more productive. Air conditioning and a faster pace of life has deprived us from conversational skills and patience with our natural surroundings, though. I wonder if future generations will become even more sedentary than we are. Will technology allow mankind to be enveloped by a microclimate even when we're out in hot weather? Maybe we can AC our blood or implant a microcooling system in the back of our necks. We're humans, not amoebas, but our tendency is to move away from painful stimuli and head toward comfort. Stay cool this summer. I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thanks, Ken. And that puts the wraps on another edition of Weekend Ag Matters. On behalf of myself, Anna Hastert, and Ken Root at the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network studios in Des Moines, we thank you for tuning in. Don't forget to follow all of our work at our website at iowaagnet.com. We'll see you next weekend for Weekend Ag Matters here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.